Blog Talk Radio.
Come on.
Hello, everyone, and good evening. Welcome to Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Caring for Animals, number 230 shows and counting. I want to welcome everyone aboard. I hope you enjoy the show. Keep coming back. All you returning listeners, thanks for all your support. And you, all you new listeners, I hope you enjoy the show and keep coming back, spreading the word to your family, your friends, your daughters, your sons, your neighbors, your coworkers, because the more voices out there, everyone, for these animals in need, the better. And we are strength in numbers. So please remember that, because we become stronger and better together than apart. My name is Debbie Dahmer. I am the producer and host for the Animal Advocates Radio, Voices Caring for Animals, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is coming live from the PPJ Gazette Online, and if you want to follow these podcasts, you can on the PPJ Gazette, you can press follow, and every time there's a new podcast or article, it will appear in your primary email to alert you. These shows are on every Thursday at 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, and 4 o'clock Pacific. Listen in worldwide with unlimited listeners. All shows are recorded live every Thursday and archived on Blog Talk Radio. So if you ever want to go back and listen, or if you miss one or come in late, just go to this link, www.blogtalkradio.com/voicescaringforanimals, and press the link you want to hear the show, and wait a minute to download, and it will play. On the left side of the screen, you could share to all social media sites, Facebook, Twitter. You can email the show. You can copy it. The cross is all on WordPress, Pinterest, LinkedIn. I mean, this list is huge, so we can all get the word out there on the Facebook. Press that share button, because these, our help is really needed for these animals in need, and all there's a lot of them that's suffering out there in pain and torture and neglected and abused, and all this is crimes here, and they should be able to live comfortably on this earth that we share all, together, temporarily. So we got to make the best of it, living in peace and not living in anxiety and torture and fear. We want them free from fear, not to walk right into it and put them in harm's way. So everyone, just do your part, take that action. Call your state representatives. Don't be afraid of them. Just be, professional, polite. You can, email them, write them a letter, make an appointment to see them. Call them up. If they're not there, to please leave a message. I mean, there's so many ways you can take action, and in the comfort of your home and phone, and it's not that difficult. It's not like we're asking you to run around the block a couple times. So this is very easy, it's convenient, and it's meaningful time for everyone, you know, to help make a positive impact in this world, not a negative one, and not do nothing. So I want to go ahead with the show and bring my guest on. It will be her first time on here, and I want to welcome her aboard. She is Rosemary Alice, and she's the president and co-founder of Global March for Elephants and Rhinos. We're going to be on the topic this evening. We're going to be see how you can get involved with the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos. These are gentle giants on this earth, and they deserve to live in peace. And ladies and gentlemen, with all this poaching going on, killing at least 75 elephants every day and over 1,000 rhinos every year for products that are unnecessary and without medicinal value will continue if we don't get it stopped. And they also demand an end to continued trophy hunting at risk species, whether in the world or in canned hunts, because this practice maintains increases demand every bit as much as poaching does. So we're going to get started here, and I want to welcome you, Rosemary. How are you this evening? Welcome aboard the Voices Carry for Animals. Thank you for coming on. Go right ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Good evening, Debbie. My name is
good
Rosemary
evening.
Alice. Good evening, and thank you so much for hosting me today. I truly I truly appreciate your good work.
Welcome. Do my best.
Yeah.
You know,
So, I want to first of all introduce the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos. Actually, give me 1 second here. Talking about animals.
Yeah, go right ahead.
This little dog is. I have to put my little dog outside the room because he's decided to start harassing me at this very second. So let me just do that. Come on,
they're adorable. They want a part of the. You know, they want to. the louder we bark, the more we're heard. Okay. So that's the key right there.
Give me 1 second.
Yeah, go right ahead. And this is such an honor and a pleasure.
Okay, so that's done. So the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos started up as an official nonprofit organization, I believe, end of 2014, 2015. And it came about as a consequence of international marches that were organized by the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust starting in 2013. The David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust had their cue in turn by local folk in Kenya, specifically a group called the Kenyans United Against Poaching, led by a wonderful woman called Salisha Chandra, who lives in Kenya. And so they started local marches, raising their voices in advocacy, in chants, in song, and in an intelligent way to approach this issue with governments, demanding that governments take action about poaching and trafficking. And so those local marches led to the DSWT, the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust International Marches, in 2013, and they were held globally. There were about 15 of them in 15 key cities, and San Francisco, where I lived at the time, was one of those cities. And what happened during that march was we realized, but prior to 2013, let me go back a little bit more, starting from about 2009, I and several others in San Francisco realized that this poaching crisis was becoming a serious and comprehensible problem in the continent, in Africa, sponsored and spurred by the demand coming from both Asia and the United States as well. And so we've been working on it locally, raising awareness, talking to people as much as we could. And having grown up, having born and grown up in Sri Lanka, I grew up around elephants, and you know, there was a kind of an intimacy about these creatures and their intelligence and their sense of matriarchy and family and wisdom and their education that all, you know, spoke very deeply to me and to so many others in the world. So having left Sri Lanka because of a terrible civil war in the country, my family found its home both in Canada and the west coast of the United States. So that's how I was living. Those were the events that led up to my living in California. So in 2008, 2009, 2010, this problem was escalating in the continent. And there was no grassroots advocacy in the United States on behalf of wildlife advocacy. Now, when I say that, I have to be careful. There's lots of advocacy from lots of wonderful groups, you know, International Fund for Animal Welfare, the Humane Society International, WCS, the Wildlife Conservation Society, and on and on and on. But none of it was visible on the streets, the kind of advocacy that is boots on the ground and that is strategic and that is intelligently compassionate. We didn't see any of that. So we were sort of in that kind of philosophical mindset and the paradigm that there has to be a louder, more compassionate and strategic voice on behalf of animals. And when I say louder, I don't necessarily mean radicalized. I mean a visible voice. And so when the marches were advocated both in Kenya by KUAPO, Kenyans United Against Poaching, and also by the DSWT, we immediately decided that this was a good avenue that we could also employ to raise awareness. So we contacted the DSWT and we asked them if we could be one of the marchers. And they obviously and very graciously welcomed us aboard. But then an interesting thing happened. We realized that a large ivory market was right in San Francisco, in Chinatown. And when we decided to march among the 15 cities, we believed that it was important to march through Chinatown, not to vilify the store owners or to point fingers, but to make the case that these incredible 50 million year old creatures were being killed and massacred and often brutally on behalf of trinkets, and that these practices, whether they were centuries old in terms of being a cultural practice or whether they were day old, that their shelf life had, that their shelf life had passed, that they were practices that we should not be engaging in anymore. And so whether it was fortunate or unfortunate, this created a kind of a tension between the DSWT and our group. And we didn't even have a name for ourselves then. We were calling ourselves loosely March for Elephants. But then when it got closer and closer to the march, most of our group voted in order to march through Chinatown and in front of the ivory stores. So, and the DSWT did not want us to do that because they felt it was creating too many waves and rocking the boat too much. And I totally understand that from their perspective. So we had to part ways. We were still one of the marches that happened, but we had to part ways with the DSWT and we marched independently, still supporting the good and fantastic work of the DSWT, but having our own agenda in terms of changing laws and policies and lobbying locally. And that march was one of the most beautiful marches I've participated ever in my life, and I've been in many, many marches. So that movement evolved to be the Global March for Elephants and Rhinos. So that's a long-winded response to your question.
Yeah, I mean, it just, as it's so much inspiring work that you're doing, you know, for these gentle giants, and it's awesome because they deserve their rights to live on this earth and not be tortured and, poachers out there and these marches and everyone out there, if you can get involved, please. Rosemary, can you give out your website? Because I know I just signed a letter in there that goes to like 18 or 20 in the nation. I did that yesterday. So if you can, please sign it, keep it going, and spread the word. That's the main thing. Share it on your Facebook page, your Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest. You know, all of us can do something to make it a positive impact out there for these animals and every angle. And it doesn't take that long, does it, Rosemary? I mean, we come together, bond together as one, and our voices are get out there. And our strength in numbers, what Ray Bittner says, when she tells me that, or I say, Ray, that I love that. Strength in numbers. You know, she's the director of operations, Community
definitely.
Cats United. And, you know, she crosses over, multitask to help other animals, just like a lot of us do, and not just one cause. Because once we double over or triple over and go help these other animals out, we will get results more faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the time, we can't do all this overnight, but at least what we can do is get together and do what we need to do. Take that action, everyone. You know, make a difference in this world because it is so much needed. These animals, you know, they're intelligent. They deserve compassion. I've had several shows, Rosemary, on Nosy the Elephant. And look what happened there. I mean, this is awesome where a Nosy the elephant is in a sanctuary. And that took several years. I think it's six or more years. You know, she has her own law. And what we're trying to fight for more, too, is Lucy the elephant up in Canada. We want to see
Billy
her get out of that zoo.
Yes. And Billy the elephant at the LA Zoo, you know.
Billy, I had a show on him. You know, all these animals deserve to live in comfort, not all, you know, confined and can't move and not comfortable, can't socialize, and it's all for profit. You know, it's not
much
for
of it
their
is.
Well-being. You know, it's profit before animals, and that should be changed around because they're in these zoos and circuses, and they're getting, you know, they have no choice. They're forced to do this. They don't say, hey, Nosy, did you want to be in the circus? Nosy didn't have a choice either. None of them do. So we have to defend them. We are animal defenders, and we have to speak out for them and do what's right because I don't like seeing them in a zoo or in a circus. You know, it's so sad because you know they're not happy, Rosemary, at all.
We don't, it's difficult to get data that measures happiness, but by any standard, if you take a creature that naturally migrates, can migrate hundreds of miles over a month, right? That is naturally social, that naturally has an affinity for family, for children, for sharing. And you would take that animal and isolate it and, you know, make it a showcase for gawking humans, no matter how well it's treated. And this is what people don't get, right? They say that in a zoo, the animal educates children. This is all true. And it can be a great avenue and an influence in terms of increasing awareness about conservation. All that is factual. However, they are not a commodity. They're a sentient thinking creature who feels and who understands at some level what it means to be alive. And it's not our job or not within our jurisdiction to take that right away from that creature. And that is something that is deeply outside the cognizance of most humans. And that's kind of where we need to move to, right? We need to move our human family into that sort of umbrella, under that tent, or that wide tent of understanding that they have rights, that they are far older and far more complete than where we are in so many, many ways, and that our sensibility with our sense of power over them is something that is deeply neurotic and outside the constraints, outside the, let's say, the embrace or the arms of compassion. And this is something that I wish with all my heart is taught in schools, that it becomes part of our curriculum, understanding these creatures better and honoring them and revering them in a more humane and compassionate way.
Oh, yes. I mean, they so well deserve it. I mean, they're just, you know, they're not bothering anybody. They're so awesome. I mean, animals, you look at how many are on this earth, you know, and I mean, from the wild, to the farm, to the domestic, to the, you know, dolphins and the whales out there. We have a lot of, oh, my goodness, it's so awesome to have them on this earth. I mean, your pets at home. You know, we have to really, you know, we have to look at it and say, listen, we know we have pets at home, and they, you know, they get treated fairly, and they have a TLC home. But we also
yes.
have to look at the animals out there that is in need, you know, to make
mm-hmm.
sure they're comfortable in a comfortable setting. Because all these shows Rosemary had, I knew it was bad out there, but I didn't know it was this bad. And there's so many of them that need so
yeah.
much help, you know, that happens
yeah.
decade after decade after decade. And just like Lucy up there, up in Canada, everybody on Facebook, if you visit and see how you can help her out, get out of this zoo. Lucy's Edmonton Advocates Project, it's called LEAP.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be bringing Mary Ann on again soon and
mm-hmm.
try to get the word out there, because we're not going
to
give up. We're relentless. You know, we want Billy
we
out.
Have to
we
be.
Just, yes, yeah. And we can't.
We,
if
we
have. Give up, Rosemary, we automatically lose for the animals, and we are winners for them. Our voices do matter. Every, you know, your a voice is your vote, and you either you're for
yes.
it or you're against it, you know. So
right, indeed,
voice your
indeed.
Opinion, yes, and not say, okay, I'm going to look the other way. Because when we look
mm-hmm.
the other way, the problems worsen. And these animals suffer. There's some of these animals suffering every minute of the day out there. You know, we don't, humans don't like, you know, headaches or pains or this or that. Can you imagine what some of these animals are going through? The pain and the torture and the discomfort, the distress of each and every day. And without us, they have no hope to carry on. And it's just a miserable world for them. So everyone, please do what you can. Get the word out there. Because we have every right to take action and do something. You know, contact your legislators. Let them know who you are, because you do count. You know, be professional, polite. 202-224-3121. Ask for your zip code, call during the week, or if after hours, you can leave a voicemail. You know, do something out there that's positive. Because we can't not shut our eyes and our mouths and our ears to all this torture and also neglect and abuse out there, distress of these animals, because it's not right to just let it just go right by us when we have the ability to help make some changes. We, the people of the United States of America, can make it happen, and we can.
Mm-hmm.
We don't give
yes.
up, and, you know, keep spreading the word out there, the awareness, the education, you know, these Facebook pages and Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, push that, you know, whatever, retweet or share or whatever you have to do to get it out there in the news feed, because it's so important. We just can't just ignore it or just let it, you know, sweep it under the carpet. Because these animals, even, you know, the lions and the bears, I mean, you name it, they have every right to be here. The wolves, you know, they share this land with, you know, all this world with us temporarily. And they mm-hmm. deserve to be treated with dignity and respect and mm-hmm. not just, you know, oh, well, they don't feel pain. Yes, they feel pain. Yes, they have feelings. Yes, they have families. You mm-hmm. know, they just speak in another language than us. So
indeed.
Whatever everyone
yes.
can do, just
yes.
do it.
Yes,
when you
indeed.
See the
victims
come through. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
I'm sorry,
and
Rosemary.
No, you finish, and then I can pick up.
Yeah, because it's so important. And, you
yes.
know, a big shout-out to all, you know, you and your all the protesters out there, you know, that's marching. It's a big, huge thank you, the advocates.
You are welcome. And, you know, I want to say that as a result of those marches, several things happened. We grew a large group of global advocates. And even this year, we've had several events all over the world, maybe about 75 to 80. And one of the things that happened during those years, 2014, 15, and 16, is we realized, it's not that we realized, but there was the data from the United States Fish and Wildlife Service that was made available that brought home the reality that the United States was the second largest market for ivory in the world, right? Second largest market.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it was brought in illegally, carved, and then sold illegally. And the big markets were really in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Hawaii, all these maritime ports with large Asian communities. Now, I want to be very clear. I work with many, many Asian folk. I myself am South Asian, and I don't want to make this a case against Asians. It's not that. It's that these cultural practices that are still engaged in, that people still engage in Asia, in China, in Thailand, and elsewhere, some of them are really devastating to the natural world. You know, bear bile, tiger bone wine, it's transitioning to lion bone wine now, you know, pangolin scales, rhino horn, elephant tusks. We don't need any of this to be happy. You know, it's like thinking you're going to go out and buy a Lamborghini, or a Tesla, and this is going to make you happy. It isn't. Maybe it's nice to have, but it's certainly not going to make you happy. So what we did was under the guidance of the Humane Society in California, the Global March gathered all its resources and people. And we went to, you know, farmers markets, flea markets, to schools, and we gathered thousands of signatures on behalf of a bill called AB 96, Assembly Bill 96. And that at that time, 96 elephants were being killed in a day, you know. And that's insane in the continent. It's down now. So we were able to, in collaboration with so many other groups, we were able to, get that bill passed in California, which is a huge thing. And as I speak, it's being enforced by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. So what AB 96 did was it closed certain loopholes that related to antique ivory. These stores, these ivory stores in Chinatown and elsewhere, let me go back a bit. There was a 1989 ban, right, that came from an international organization called CITES. And CITES stands, you may have heard of it, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. It's like a governing body that governs the trade of endangered species, Well, first of all, there should be no trade in endangered species, but be that as it may, this body, which is sort of like a loose affiliation of various nations coming together to control the trade, to regulate the trade. And because of so many wonderful organizations, Save the Elephants and others, DSWT working in Africa on behalf of this, in 1989, a ban was passed, an international ban was passed on the trade of ivory. However, it left some loopholes open. In other words, if the ivory was older than a certain number of years and purchased before a certain number of years, it could be sold. So what was happening when the poaching escalated was that loophole was being exploited and new ivory was being disguised as old ivory and sold. So this is the loophole that we managed. That's roughly, there's more to the law than that, but that's roughly what AB 96 did. It closed all those loopholes for elephant horn and ivory tusk and so on. And another thing, and so that's a big achievement. I'm very proud of that work. And we also went to Hawaii and lobbied on behalf of closing the loopholes there. And eventually an organization called Vulcan got involved in Hawaii and with our help and the help of several other organizations, including the Conservation Council of Hawaii, there was a law passed there also that was sweeping ban on the trafficking of wildlife. And so New York followed, New Jersey followed, and there's also one in Washington. So it's a lot of good work. And one thing that we need to remember is which is very, very important, that in the last several years I've been living in South Africa, and one of the things that I recognized when I went there is most folk who poach, and poaching should continue to be a crime. But however, one must remember that most people who poach are desperately poor. So if there is a market, when you're incredibly poor and you have to put food on the table for your family, or, you know, you need the finances to survive, you're pretty much going to do anything when you're desperately poor. That's not a justification, but that's a reality. And so because the market in China and other places exist, Hong Kong, China, Thailand, elsewhere exist, those markets are exploited by, you know, those markets, the fact that those markets exist are exploited by folk in Africa who the middleman who goes out and recruits some poor person to go out and poach. So those things need to be remembered, that in the West we can shut down the markets, and we can do the same in the East. But as long as, even if there's a black market, the poaching will continue. Now, poaching rates have dropped, not for all animals, but certainly for elephants. So that's another aspect that people need to remember and consider when they approach this subject in a thoughtful way.
Yeah, that poaching and stuff is so, I've seen some horrific photos, you know, and some of these people, they put photos through where they just killed an elephant or a rhino or giraffe or whatever. And it's like, why do you see that photo amazing or great? Because I think it's so heartbreaking to see that kind of stuff, Rosemary. It is so, I don't know. It's like, go take a picture with your loved ones or, you know, your pets or something, but not with a dead animal, because that is so, I don't know. I don't want to look at them, you know. It's heartbreaking.
And the trophy hunting, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's just,
it's
so
horrible.
Yes,
just
it
disgusting.
Is, and it's, you know, it's disgusting. It's like, you know, why, you know, smiling with a dead animal, or, you know, that's not right. That's not showing. That's losing all respect and cruel and heartless. You know, what turns them on about that? I mean, I just look like I'm flabbergasted, okay? Because
and the thing is, you are like leaning into the crux of the problem. Wherever in the world there's poverty and disenfranchisement, right? it becomes mm-hmm. exploited. So if you go to a really poor village and you tell these people, look, we are going to go hunt these elephants who are bothering you anyway, and we are going to give you a certain percentage of the profits from what the trophy hunter pays us, they're immediately not going to say no to that. They're going to say yes. But the person doing it is highly exploitive, right? They want mm-hmm. to go out there and kill and get the trophy, and they're willing to pay, you know, significant amounts of money for this activity, and they try to make the case that trophy hunting is synonymous with conservation because it keeps, you know, people fed, and it gives people resources where other avenues haven't brought those resources, and they even make the case that in some cases concessions where the trophy hunting is done, the hunting concessions, that they keep wild areas free. The irony is, all that is a little bit true, right? It's a little bit true. All of it is a little bit true. That's why they're able to continue to do it. But if you look at the big picture, it's the epitome of being unethical and exploitive, and without regard for life, right? So the reason they're able to do it is, the number one reason is corrupt governments, number one. And Africa, it saddens me to say this, the continent of Africa is ridden with corrupt governments, you know, corrupt governments that exploit its people. And in the presence of poverty, corruption really thrives because everybody is looking for a handout or a way to earn a living or to survive. So on the one hand, even though it's a terrible situation and can't be, you know, it's not justification, it's the reality. On the other hand, the folk from the West, like Europe and the US, who go there and trophy hunt, the real blame is there. And the association with the NRA also needs to be highlighted. So guns, violence, money, corruption, poverty, those things are intimately linked. And it would be really a really wonderful thing to have the resources to do a comprehensive study on this and to publish what the outcome is from trophy hunting and the links with the Dallas Safari Club and the Safari Club International and so on. It's a racket. It really is a racket.
Yes, it is, and it needs to change around. Let's, you know, get it out of there, ban it, you know, get it. Times are changing. We're into the 21st century. That stuff is not needed by all means, you know. We have to do what we can do, you know. So everyone, and I got a caller calling in, Rosemary, if you'd like to take a call.
Absolutely, yes.
Comments or questions, area code 603. Welcome to Animal Advocates Radio. You're live and on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Debbie.
Hello?
It's Barbara Lovett. Hello.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
How are you?
Hi.
Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, Barbara.
Taking my call. How are you, Rosemary?
I'm good, honey. It's our own little party, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. On Debbie's show, it's always a party. We have so much fun.
We're party animals, okay? We're trying to get them into a positive party, too. When, you know, live comfortably and have a good time out there, you know, enjoying life, not just, you know, suffering.
That's the whole
but thank you.
Yeah. I'm really pleased to be on the show again. I've been on several times with Debbie, talking about Nosy and our work for other elephants in the United States. And I've been very interested in hearing what you had to say, Rosemary. Of course, I follow your page and know what's going on with the Global March every year. I just wondered what you think about the latest news with Charles Siebert's most wonderful expose of what's going on in the U.S. zoos. What I understand is that Dan Ash, who is the president and CEO of the AZA, which is the Association of Zoo and Aquarium.
Yes.
And he's the former director of Fish and Wildlife, and he's granted the zoo's permission to import more elephants from Zimbabwe. Now, they
did this back
a few years ago from Swaziland, and three zoos in the United States took in 18 elephants. One of them died on the way, so there was a total of 17. Give me your thoughts and views on that.
So here's the thing. This is this real paradox. It's sort of a dystopian reality within which some of these folk operate, right? They see conservation as one issue, and then they see the zoos as distinct and a disparate issue, right? So they believe the at the heart of this problem is what I think Debbie and I were talking about at the outset of the show, is for animal advocates like you, myself, Debbie, and hundreds and thousands of others, the animal is not a commodity, right? So we see the creature as sentient, living and with feeling and with family and ancient and complete. And I don't want to, you know, make assumptions about Dan Ash, because he did some great work under Obama with regard to, you know, banning, you know, the numbers of trophies coming into the U.S. and also with regard to tightening the laws for illegal ivory smuggled into the U.S. and being in turn sold. So he did some fantastic work then. But what they see is that in order to save, the ethic is that not the same, but close to the ethic of trophy hunters. So the trophy hunters honestly and truly believe that their work, they see it as work, is conservation related. So if they hunt a bull who's 35 in the prime of its life, and $500,000 gets to some government in Africa, and a percentage of that goes to maintain the wilderness and to feed the local people, they see that as a win for conservation. And if I were to be blunt, as I said, there's an element of truth in that, right? But to someone like me, it's deeply unethical, because you have taken a life that you have no right to take, right? Mm-hmm. So because each individual life is precious. You wouldn't kill a child. You wouldn't kill your dog. So how do you justify killing this creature who has a right to its existence? So I think it's the same ethic that prompts these folk to say, if we pay the government of such and such a country and we take the babies away and they allocate some of that funding to conservation and the zoo gets to keep these elephants, even if one or two die, and then there's education in the zoo, overall, they see it as a win for conservation. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, I do. I understand their point of view. Of course, the point of view of the elephant is a whole different ballgame.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not really education. When you're in a zoo, you're not getting the education that you think you are. A lot of people just walk through. They may read a couple of things. There may be a person there answering a couple of simple questions, but they're not getting the full story of that elephant's life and where that elephant came from, what they had to deal with to get here. And it's really a travesty when you see an elephant in a zoo. They're not a real elephant. They're not living the life that they should be living. They're in confinement. They're away from their family. They're not able to be with others that have been, you know, like their mothers and their father. I mean, their fathers too to some degree, but their mothers and their aunts and they're the matriarchal herd. So it's really a travesty when you see an elephant in a zoo. It's not a true elephant. And it just breaks my heart.
Yes, it is. And thank you for your fantastic work, Fanosi. It's always wonderful to see that. It's appreciated. But at the heart of it is this problem that we don't see nature, we don't see life other than human life, and even human life. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that it was perfectly fine to capture people from Africa and bring them over here as slaves. You know, that happened, right?
Exactly.
Not so long ago. And so it's the same kind of ethic. I mean, people don't like it when I say it because they feel it's provocative. It is provocative. But it's also the truth. Until we see life, all life, as being sentient, now you can't live without an impact, right? You know, some people are of the opinion that, okay, if you, you know, this whole issue comes into how do you take life? Now, if I was a Inupia Gwich'in in the northern parts of Alaska, living close to the, in Kaktovik, for example, and you went out and hunted a caribou and you ate the animal and you used its skin, I have no judgment on that because it is, it's more of a sustainable way to live. And creatures do eat each other, including humans, right? But if it's a commodification of the creature for commerce, and to make the case that, you know, in order to save 100, we have to sacrifice 5, I don't think I will ever get on that bandwagon, because that's the same argument that Masisi, the president of Botswana, is now making also. With regard to the elephants in Botswana, he's saying in order to save, you know, hundreds and thousands, we have to give up 5. And you have to ask the question, why? Why do you need to do that? Right?
Right. Would you do that with children? Would you give up 5 children to make
to save 100?
Better?
No.
Yeah, to save 100? No. I don't know. Maybe he would. I don't know. He seems to be kind of a bad guy.
I want to say about Masisi. On the one hand, he has very good ideas, and he's very good for the people of Botswana, and he's also good with regard to corridors, with creating corridors for elephants. So that's a big, big plus. So I don't know how far that campaign has progressed, but I've been reading and hearing good things about his desire to create more open spaces and to create corridors between these hotspots so that elephants can migrate, right? But with regard to trophy hunting and culling, his attitudes are different. At one point, they were even considering culling these elephants and selling their flesh as dog meat. I mean, that's nuts. It's just beyond. It's crazy.
It's beyond comprehension.
Know?
It really is.
It is. It is beyond comprehension. But the thing is, when you live in Africa, and I would recommend, and you know, recommend that if you can do it, to go spend 6 months there and you experience the desperate poverty of people, you understand why to a person who is incredibly poor in Africa, the elephant is like, and I hate to say this because I feel every creature deserves reverence. It's like a cow, you know, it's like a cow. It's not the kind of sensibility we in the West have about it. And one has to find a way in one's mental and spiritual landscape to not to appreciate that viewpoint, but to accommodate it. Because so much has happened to these folk that there's like almost like no room there to accommodate this other point of view, unless we are prepared to work with them daily, hourly, yearly, to create a difference. So one of the best things we can do is work through schools to create awareness, you know, in these areas.
Yes, education is key.
Absolutely.
Education
and the same
is
thing with Sri Lanka.
Key.
And what you do, like Asian elephants, right? I mean, in Sri Lanka, it's the same, and I was born there. I've spent so many hours over the last 3 days, and I've kind of taken this year a little step back from advocacy because I had a really nasty back injury. So I'm just coming back into it. And I spent the last 3 days talking to people who are working in villages on behalf of raising awareness and fencing and all of the above so that the elephants are not killed with, you know, firecrackers. They call them hakkapatas. Maybe you know about it.
Yes, I do.
And captured and taken into the Parahara, and I won't mention any names, but it's virtually almost impossible to get past the corruption. Everybody wants a piece of something. Like one of the ladies who went to this remote part of Sri Lanka to do this, so you have to like meet with the village head, you have to meet with the head of the temple. You know, all these people are looking for a handout. And on the one hand, it's incredibly frustrating. On the other hand, they're poor. So,
you're caught in what we're dealing with in all these countries, in Botswana, Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka.
Yes.
You're dealing with incredible poverty. I know that Zimbabwe, you know, they're saddled with a debt of about $21 million. They're doing everything they can. But one of the things that is concerning to me today, I read an article earlier about them privatizing the commercial side of the national parks in Zimbabwe. And they're currently seeking investors. Because it's going to make profit, of course, maximum profit on the entities. And that really bothers me. The news just doesn't seem to get better. You know, I took what you said about Masisi, and I know that not, you know, a person who does certain things doesn't mean that that's what they're all about. I understand that there are, you know, especially a president of a country as important as Botswana, he has to listen to various sides of the issue, and he has to come up with the best plan for the most people, I would assume, and the most resources that he has. Of course, it always bothers me, too, that he sees elephants and other animals in his country as resources. Something that could be harvested. I hate those words. I hate the word harvest.
Me too.
And we
need to point it out, you know, with compassion, with kindness. There's something very interesting and uplifting going on in the world. At the same time, there's something really devastating happening too. And on the one hand, people are awakening. You know, they're awakening to a more compassionate way of being, right? On the other hand, Mother Nature is at a threshold, you know, climate change is creating massive droughts. Human populations in India and Africa are increasing, which is, I think, really bad news for the animals, right? I mean, humans may disagree with me, but I think it's bad news. And this sensibility that nature is a resource is just, it's going to bring us to a standstill. I mean, at some point, there's going to be these calamitous, apocalyptic events that are going to happen through climate. I'm convinced about it. Science is telling us.
I'm with you. I believe that.
So I don't know if we, you know, we have to keep working. We have to remain committed and also hopeful. But I have reached a point where, and I don't know if I want to even say this because it discourages people, where I'm not sure that we'll get past this sense that we are somehow, you know, have the power to control nature, and we're going to continue to do the things we always did with the same results over and over and over and over again. And that's a painful reality to come to. So that's
very painful. But I think I'm with you. I think that it's very true that climate change is the biggest issue of our time. It is the most crisis-inducing issue that we've had. And if we don't do something about it right this minute, then nothing's going to happen. And, of course, governments not working and not moving forward on the issue aren't helping.
I mean, all we're
doing is sitting and spinning our wheels. We as individuals can do our own little thing and try to, you know, do as much of the green stuff as we can, not use the fossil fuels, not use plastic, not, you know, do our best as individuals. But unless everybody does it, it's not going to make that big
deal. It's not going to make a difference.
It's not going to make a difference.
Exactly. Yeah. And yesterday, I mean, for the first time, I felt like maybe Senator Sanders is right. We need an absolute structural change, you know? Maybe he's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway.
We need to get more serious about it. You know, it's very important. And anyway, I got it. Barb, stay on air, okay? I got another caller calling in. And I appreciate you really calling in. And even after Nosy, you're still out there and you're relentless fighting for more elephants and circus
bless
and everything.
Your heart.
So
thank you.
A big shout out to you and your staff out there, too. You know, it's so meaningful. And area code 719, you're live and on the air. Welcome to Animal Advocates Radio. Is this Mama Cat? Hey, are you there?
It's me.
All right. Thank you for calling in. And Barb and Rosemary, she is for the Community Cats United, and she, you know, calls and supports this show and crosses over, helps other animals. This is what you call teamwork, you know. It's so important.
Wonderful.
But go ahead, Ray.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I have a little bit of a question as to how do we educate, you know, I've been reading, getting ready for this show, I was reading some articles on that now not only are they poaching the ivory from these elephants, they're using their hide. And a lot of the Asian medicines, I mean, they have recipes in their books and their teachings. How do we educate that out of their lives? I mean, they
Yes, it's really, really good question. You know, it's going to, you know, this kind of conversation really should have happened 50 years ago. And while the NGOs did some great work in Africa, they were very much an exclusive group of people like me, foreigners coming in and kind of dictating to the local people how they should behave. So that never took off, right? Because you need to listen carefully to people, even if you agree with them at a deeply fundamental level, because in order to get anything done, we have to come to the table together. So I found that one of the things that works really well, like if you talk to local people, indigenous people in Africa or Sri Lanka or elsewhere, and if you give them some kind of recipe saying don't do this, don't do that, it really doesn't work. You have to spend considerable amount of time with them building trust so that they understand that you care about them as deeply perhaps as you care about the animal. And that's very hard in this world where the animals are decreasing and humans are increasing. But that's what's required of us. This really requires that Martin Luther King sensibility, you know, where love is the motivating factor that forces us, that forces that arc of compassion to embrace all of life. And what I found worked was when you talk in specifically with regard to elephants, right, you can give them the data and you can talk about 96 or 70 elephants a day, you know, 35 to 40,000 a year. And you can talk about the rhino horns, one every 12 hours. And all of this doesn't make that much of a difference. What does make a difference is talking about the mothers and the babies and talking about that intimacy, about how they are so ancient, about their lives and how they feel about their children and how they walk hundreds and hundreds of miles to find water and how they dig wells that other animals use and how they are an archive of knowledge and a tremendous gift to earth and how they disperse seeds so well and how they architect forests. And when you craft this poetry that is what they are and that's why they appeal to us so much, then you get the energy in the room really grounded and people start listening. And then that's that emotional, that intersection at the emotion and intellect is where I think we need to work. And another thing that we need to remember is, especially in places like South Africa, this is not true of Kenya, but South Africa, where apartheid was only, you know, in 1994, they had their first democratic election, right? These people were fenced off. They were taken away from the national parks, what are now national parks, and fenced off in kind of reservations. So you have people who are sometimes 60 years old who've never seen an elephant. And I, the foreigner, have experienced more elephant life than they have. So when you talk to them about elephants, they have, yeah, what why do you care about elephants? Why should I care about elephants? I'm so poor, right? I've never seen one. I've never seen them be around their children. Some have even not seen a documentary. You know, so this is the reality on the ground. And so to change this, there has to be a great deal of humility. And if you can work through schools that are already established to support
yes.
those schools, create a curriculum that talks about these animals, that takes these kids into Kruger once in a while, you know, it's not that expensive. For $300-$400 a pop, it's even less. For $250 maybe, you can do a trip with 16 children into Kruger once a month to show them the animals.
And
right?
Ladies, I hate to interrupt you. We're going to be shut down here in a few minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Rosa, no problem. It was another great show, and it's so interesting in facts and awareness. But thank you, Rosemary, for coming on this evening, and looking forward to having you come back, okay? And also, Barbara Levette, the same nosy now. Thank you so much for calling in, a former guest several times, and we're looking forward to having you come back. And Ray Bittner, Community Cats United, looking forward to you coming back. So I always like having these shows and, you know, see how much progress has been made and how we can all help out. But everyone, thank you for tuning in this evening. Next Thursday will be Steve Hughes. He's the president of Pet Match by Pets in Danger. Hope you join us. And a big shout-out to all your support. The time's running out in all the groups, Facebook groups, Twitter, friends, family, you know, followers, everybody. Thank you for all your support, and have a wonderful and peaceful evening. And please keep helping these animals because they need our help. And make sure to come in next week, spread the word, and keep them coming in. Keep the action takers coming in and doing their part. Good night, everyone, and have a nice evening. May God bless you all. Good night, Barb and Rosemary and Ray. Have a good one.
Good night,
thank you.
And thank you so much,
love
all of you.
Hey, you're so
love
welcome.
You
love
bye.
All your support, okay? Keep,
okay. Bye-bye.
You'll keep being relentless. Bye-bye now. Thank
bye.
You.
Drink good numbers.